Right. Another week. Another some good questions this week. Good ones.
Let's go then. Let's go. Come on. Let's go. Let's not flip
Well
about.
then, you can go first.
All right. Client month review. Is that the first one? Client monthly reviews?
No.
Oh, that's the seventh. Sorry. My bad. My bad, Nicholas.
Please recommend.
Please recommend what you would cover or include in a general sickness policy relating to clients cancelling sessions. Do you make up sessions with an already full schedule? It seems unreasonable to penalize the client for something that's not their fault. Clients do not seem interested in anything other than one-to-one or face-to-face sessions. They also expect what they are paying for as part of the service to be delivered. How do you communicate all of this in a fair and reasonable way without the issue affecting your business? That's the first question. There's two questions.
Dead simple. I agree in regards to clients. They expect what they're paying for. It also depends on what you're presenting and what they're paying for. Look, there's too many variables and different circumstances to write one policy that will fit all circumstances with illnesses and injuries and conditions, etc., etc. So the very simple thing of a freezing option, if you're doing monthly payments, for example, would probably be an easy fit for most, depending on the time. And then obviously to pick it up the month after or whatever time, and then just correlate that to a pro rata payment or to fit in line with the next monthly payment thereafter. So the very first thing is upon consultation. That's the first thing. And whether that is multiple, calls throughout, and it completely depends on the individual, how long they're out for, the severity of the illness, the injury, etc., etc. So there can't be one written policy which will fit every circumstance. But injury, illness, whether it goes with family breed, anything like that, where it's going to affect them coming to the gym and turning up, have a consultation, determine the next route that might be. I'm not going to sit here and go, well, that could be online, it could be lower intensity in the movements you do. All that. But the key thing is consultation, and I think a freezing of that months of coaching will probably be the best bet for most options if they physically can't train for that time. That's what I would suggest.
Second part of the question. Please remind me what should be included in a COVID policy, both relating to the trainer and or the client for being off sick. Thanks.
Same thing. yeah, exactly the same thing. People are going to be, obviously, this is different now with people coming. Is it ending at the end of the month? The isolation stuff?
I don't know.
I think it's, well, going, let's say it's going on the way it is now, exactly the same thing happens. Consultation. What are the best options for you and the client, depending on the severity of how they're ill or what they can do or how comfortable they feel? Have a few contingency plans, whether that's remote, whether that's supporting off online, whether that's continuing. I think you've got to have those contingency plans, but ultimately, if they're not going to train with you and you don't feel right in charging them for if you can't train them face to face, that's the way you set your business up, then a freezing option is probably the best thing. I.e., you freeze it there and then, and you pick it up 2 weeks later down the line, and you adjust the next payment towards that. That's what I would say. Anything else on that, Anthony?
No.
That's very good. Very good. Very, very good. Going to be doing seminars at the gym. At the end, would I present my service, or would you offer another workshop / lead gen activity to increase interactions?
It depends how you're bringing people into them seminars. So the way I would see it is your seminar is your lead magnet. And obviously you're taking data capture throughout the month to get people to the seminar. So that would be the final piece in the marketing puzzle to then pitch your business and service at the end of it. What I would say is that I would incentivize the people who comes to the seminar. Like, they don't, if you do consultations for free, they don't potentially know that. So it might be that anyone who's come to the seminar today, normally my consultations, goal setting and building plans for people and stuff like that is X price. But as a bit of a thank you for coming, you've got the opportunity to book in and you can do that here now. So I would drive some value behind the consultation. So I suppose what I'm answering is probably you would pitch your service at the end of it. So how you would get them into that is obviously book a call for a consultation and take the bookings there and then and talk about it in detail. So that's potentially will drive a level of urgency and intent behind it. But then if they're in your seminar, you should already have their data. So you should be able to still remarket to them. So even if they go and don't book a consultation, then you can still remarket to them via email or via a social media page or group that you've got them in. So yeah, it very much depends how you drive the leads into the seminar. Because what in an ideal world, what you would like to do is the seminar is the lead magnet. It has a specific subject or topic that's very desirable and relevant for your demographic. So then you drive your marketing message throughout that 2-3 weeks building up to the seminar about the seminar, what they're going to get from it, how is it going to benefit them, how is it going to make them feel once they've finished it. And then also, like, whilst you've been in the process of kind of building up this seminar, you've been remarketing to them with social media posts, helping them on the gym floor, you've been emailing them, all of that type of stuff. So in my opinion, the seminar should be enough for you to present your service at the end, or at least some entry level thing into your service for that consultation or goal setting call or whatever it is. Yeah, that would be my spin on it. They should be, like I said, they should be in your market to carry on interacting with anyway, within your network, should I say, to carry on interacting with it anyway afterwards. So that would be my go-to. How can I make lead gen on the gym floor really effective?
First of all, have a plan of what you're going to do, when you're going to do it. Secondly, manage your expectations. You know, what leads to a sale at the end of the day is getting to building that know, like, and trust. If you're going in for the sale or positioning something before you get to know someone and build some level of rapport with them, then that's probably going to be an ineffective way of generating business. My eyes blowing up. So that's the second thing. Manage your expectations. Understand what your objective is. Third thing is have some go-to activities, whether that is meet and greet, whether that is questionnaires, whether that is health checks, ad hoc classes, competitions, challenges, warm-up stations, whatever it is, have some go-to things that you can set up and run, which is going to be enjoyable. You're going to like talking about it. You're going to enjoy talking to people about that certain subject or that certain thing that you're doing. I think you need to be passionate about talking about it. That way you will sell yourself and an idea organically and authentically. And always create an opportunity to follow up. So whether that is through email, whether that's through getting people on your social, whether that's booking people in back in the next week to see how that exercise you showed them, how they went with that, whether that is sending them a mini program, like, create an opportunity to follow up. And the last thing is, how you achieve all of that is ask really good questions to find out what the person's doing, what they want to achieve, how well is it working for them currently, and what they think they need to change moving forward. And just be really curious. There we go.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a four-parter.
Four-parter?
Four-parter.
Bloody hell.
It's not our friend Mr. Rose either.
No, we've got a new one on the scene here.
Right. One, in terms of potential services available, do you think having too many offers can confuse and dilute your offering?
yes, I do. I think at any given time, personally, and this is just a personal opinion, I think if you have more than two going on, it does start to confuse the message slightly. I would really home in on one for a campaign or for a bit of a process and a journey. And yeah, I would just go all in on one. But obviously, if you've got that second one in the background, that's great. And essentially, when you're doing a marketing campaign, it should be that however long it is, that you kind of recycle certain things or parts of it anyway. So you'll go for a marketing campaign for, let's say, 4 weeks. And then you might switch this other product or service back on that was in the background. You talk about it lightly and so on, but you make it clear and obvious that it's still there for people to buy. But I wouldn't be having more than two on at any given time, in my opinion anyway. And I think also I've witnessed this the last couple of weeks on social media where I've been watching somebody else. And now it's starting to, they're getting questions in their question box of, it's just pure confusion. So they've had to go through it as well. So yeah, I would try and steer away from offering more than two at any given time.
So what are some of the great courses other than yours, obviously, that you think could benefit, be a benefit to an experienced coach? These could be in any field. What sort of course, some courses that have stood out to you guys?
Okay, you can answer the other two in a minute because I'm not answering all four. It's unfair, Nick. We've got to share it. This always is it depends because it depends on your kind of values and what it is that you want for your personal training business and like all of that type of stuff. But I'll rattle some off that I really value from a course perspective. So I think the Gary Mendoza behavior change kind of specialist course is really good for any PT to do. It helps you start to understand the broader picture of behavior change and how motivation, self-determination theory really dials into understanding people and getting better client adherence. I think from a nutrition perspective, I don't think you could go wrong with Emma and Amelia's EIQ course. I think I would definitely recommend that for the majority of people because we've had so many good reports from the guys in the academy who've done that. I'm trying to think now of programming. We endorsed the PFCA FFC level one. So that's very much about different elements of movement screening, programming, coaching, all of that type of stuff. So that's a really good course to tap into for any new or existing PT who wants to go back over programming. Another one that I would say that I would recommend from a programming perspective is Greg Slater's course within Lift the Bar for programming at the minute. That seems to be getting rave reviews. It sounds tough because there's a lot of moving parts to it, but it's getting a lot of rave reviews from the guys who have been in and out of the academy over the years. Any others that I've missed? I think there's some just key ones that have come to the top of my head that are good courses.
No, behavior change, NLP. MI, they're the game changers, I think.
Yeah, they will be. Right, I'll ask you these next two. What are the values and vision of the PTMA? What are the values and goals and visions of Nick and Ant?
Values of PTMA, I think one of them is always going to be we coach, and I think coming from being, you know, basically PTs and coaches, you know, bringing that into what we do now, working with people. And on the surface of it, you'd think like, you know, we're business mentors, but it's always coaching. It's It's always coaching, you know. So I think coaching, making sure that when you get to the point when you leave us, whether that's one-to-one, the program, the whatever, you leave us in a much better place than you started with, and you have a next very clear understanding of what to do next, whether that's go on to do another course, go on to a different business course or sales and marketing or nutrition or whatever. That's kind of a really big focus for us, that, you know, you definitely leave us better off than you came in, which it sounds simple, but I think that's around attracting the people with similar values and views as us as well, that actually do the courses and work with us. I think the general vision of PTMA is just to affect the industry. You know, it's to give PTs, coaches, first of all, a place where they can feel like they're not by themselves. I think that's a big thing. It's a huge thing. And they're around people who want similar things for themselves and the industry. And to help and affect the industry, to make sure that PTs are enabled to stay in the industry and make it a career, not a short stop. And at the same time, help a load of people out with their fitness and nutrition goals, and, you know, for them to enjoy the industry and give themselves the lifestyle that they came into the industry for. So that's the kind of vision and general values of PTMA. Can't speak for Ant on goals, visions and values, but as a pretty similar, we want to enjoy.
I think as a business, obviously we're clearly aligned as a business and all that, as Nick just said, is exactly what we're about. Like, one of the things that we talked about even like 5-6 years ago when we started to put this together, and then we've obviously really put it had a really strong vision and view of what we want to do for the past kind of 3 years or so, was we wanted to kind of raise the standards of coaching and create well-rounded businesses and well-rounded coaches, because what you've got in the fitness industry is pockets of, like, everyone's got, seems to have like an all-in vision and view on one area. So, like, it has to be, and actually this plays into your next question. Like, there's someone who will make you a lot of money, right? So we know who they are. So you can go to a mentor or a coach and they will make you a lot of money, or you'll go to a part of business that will make you a great at programming and all of that. And I think we put ourselves in a position with such a lot of reinvestment in ourselves over the past kind of 20 plus years to be able to sit here and go, well, our vision is to make you a well-rounded business owner and more so a well-rounded coach. And that means that you feel confident and competent in all areas, whether that's everything from customer service to finances, to metrics, to coaching cues, to programming, to how you handle a client who's struggling with nutrition, to how you position a marketing strategy. Like, we basically want to cover all angles. And we wanted, the biggest thing for us is that we want personal trainers and coaches to leave us in a much, much better state than when they come to us. And like, just to kind of cap off on what Nick said, like, that's coming from a very, very coaching focused, basically very much coaching focused environment, where is in other programs and courses, you'll probably get dictated at and not feel heard. And that, for us, even though we then will take on a smaller volume of people to then make sure that even on a group program, they feel heard. And that's really, really important to us, and that'll never leave us. So yeah, that's us. Next question was, do you think finances should be one of the main drivers for building a successful business, or should this be a process of nailing your values, vision, and perfecting the client journey?
It depends on your situation, to be honest, but it's got to be one of the main drivers. It needs to be in there with one of the main drivers, because, and I think at least until that point of, and you'll go through cycles, won't you? You'll go through cycles of, you know, when you've first couple of years and you trying to establish, you know, profit margin and stability and financial stability in your business, that's going to be a bigger driver. Like, it just, because otherwise you're not going to be able to sustain yourself in the industry. But I think then it starts to flex a little bit, generally onto, you know, giving yourself a better product and being able to scale. And So, or should this be as a process of nailing your values, vision, and perfecting the client journey? It is, yeah, but you've still got to have that understanding of making sure that your business is financially viable. And I think when you start to push out, like, understanding, like, your values and your vision and understanding kind of what service you want to deliver and what impact you want to have, you know, essentially the byproduct of that is probably helping more people, and byproduct of that is earning a decent wage or more money. So focus on the processes, you'll get the return. But I think it does flex from, you know, circumstance to circumstance and different times of your career. So yeah, that's what I would say.
Can I just add to that question? I think a big part of what we do, and it aligns with question three that you asked, is a big part of what we do. And I went out on the video and said this when I went on Instagram. I said, like, for any business, revenue is a key driver. But for me and Nick within the academy, it's probably what differentiates us with other people. And this is not saying that we're wrong, right, or whatever. It's great to see everyone earning money, because that gives you opportunity. It gives you opportunity for mortgages, to open gyms, to all of that stuff that we've helped people with over the years. But for us, it's like, you've just heard what our values and visions are. It's surrounded by making you a well-rounded coach, delivering a well-rounded service. Because I think something that we're really passionate about is, when we got to a point where we don't coach as many clients, it's when we're helping people and mentoring, coaching people within the academy, it's that we're, one of our real strong core values is that we see a ripple effect of that in you changing the lives of people within your business. What we don't like is when it becomes all about revenue, and that's the only end goal, and it's like, I'm going to drive as many people through the business, as much revenue through the business as possible. Because then, from our experience of dealing with thousands of PTs, what normally happens then is the client experience, the coaching, and the client care is the afterthought, and that there's a disconnect then. So I think where people might resonate with us, that are you against having financial tags? Absolutely not. It needs to be the main driver behind any business performance going forward. But when it's the only driver, there becomes a disconnect in service and coaching and all of that, from our experience. So it has to be there, it's important, but also at the same time, it's what can't be sacrificed in the hunt for 10K months, for example, is your clients feeling heard, your clients getting the right support, getting the right coaching, and getting the right service. Because as soon as that starts to break down, for me, that's taking the standards of coaching backwards and taking the standards of your business backwards in the hunt for revenue. And that just doesn't align with us. And hopefully you've kind of got that from the way we've answered some of the questions. I just thought I'd add my 2 pence in there, Nick.
You asked me to do your questions and then you take it back over. No, it's fine. No, you do what you talk, mate.
Listen, you fucking pass.
It's your world.
I don't want to answer just 4 questions in it, right? On the bounce. I was just sharing it. I don't want to answer 4 questions on the bounce, right?
I did a comp the other week and got 160 leads. Sent a few emails out to them already, and so far 0 responses. Just looking for some helps and tips on how I can make use of all of those leads.
Okay, so from this, and I'm making an assumption, right? So you did a comp, got 160 leads, and then off the back of it, essentially the 0 responses are probably because they don't know what was coming next. So if you're doing a competition like this, fact is, the only people, what they're waiting for is have they won or have they not, right? So in my opinion, what should happen is, if I'm doing a comp and I'm getting data capture, I'm then releasing and planning a series of emails that are different varied types of emails. So they might be one that's short, personal, expected and response. Off the back of it, so short and personal, asking questions, how are you getting on with X program or whatever. Then there's some content, 5 tips for this. Then there's another short personal one. Then there's one that's driving a really direct call to action. But you've got a constant sequence of emails. Now, I would be wary of your expectations off the back of it, because if you've done a competition, people's view is, have I won or have I not? And if I've not, then what's the point? I'm not, no need for me to respond. So you have to continue to add value off the back of that competition. And this is where I think any lead magnet, whether it's a program you give out, a seminar you do, a workshop you do, a competition or whatever, any lead magnet that you do, as soon as you release it, it should already have at least 5 to 10 emails, in my opinion, that takes them over 2-3 weeks, that nurtures leads after that, that then has different varying objectives between getting a response, getting people to take action on whatever the call to action is, or adding value, relevant value from the information that you know your demographic needs to support them to get to where they want to be. So I would look at how you can improve that going forward and then manage your expectations slightly. And maybe get your copy of your emails and subject lines and all of that, get that reviewed by a copywriter just to see if you can improve. Next question is, how to keep clients interacting in a Facebook group after my challenge finishes? It's going amazing right now and I would like to keep this rolling.
So I think before it stops, before that challenge finishes, obviously you'll probably have some calls to action that you want to throw out there anyway. But I think going forward, ask the audience what they want in the future, in the coming weeks. Once the challenge is finished, do they want another one? I think that's the key thing to have, because we could throw out some ideas from, you know, obvious stuff like going live and maybe putting some group accountability in there and maybe doing themes of the week so you keep that, you keep the content coming into the group. But I think ultimately, like, give some options to the guys on what they want to see moving forward. You know, challenges work really well because it obviously gives them a time sensitive goal, whatever that looks like, and so obviously that keeps them both externally motivated but probably intrinsically motivated as well if it's a decent thing. So I think you got to follow suit with that, but also go off the group and what they are basically wanting to see. But do lead some action, do lead with some ideas, because if you just go, what would you like to see next? You'll probably find that it falls, people don't know what to put. So give some options, give some opinions, lean on some of the, let's say the more vocal people in the group, you know, your, let's call them promoters, the loud people, the ones that want to get, that's, you know, engaged with everything. Tag people in. Making sure you tag people into this, let's say, fact-finding little mission. And also, mate, I think even off the back of that, Facebook groups, you've got to expect, you know, a roller coaster of engagement and disengagement at times. It's just the way, it's just going to happen. You're going to have periods of time where it peaks and troughs all the time. So just manage your expectations on it as well. That's all I'd say. What works best for conversations? I'm great at normal. Hi, how are you? How's your training? But when do I ask for mailing information?
I think, first of all, the repetition of that. So like, then if you've, hi, how are you, how's your training going, got their name and remembered what they trained. So if I see them again the next day, following up on that, how was that pull session yesterday? Hi, Nick, how was that yesterday? How was the, what session are you doing today? That type of stuff. I think following up on that, people really value it, because it's not then as if you're interacting just because you want them to go to this next stage of catching leads. But apart from that, I'm following up and looking as though you care, remembering names, remembering the conversations that you have and all of that, because they really value it. I would have a lead magnet. So interacting with people on the gym floor is obviously clearly great. And then when we want to then take some data off the back of that, is I would have something that's relevant there that you know is going to help with these people. So whether that's a program, whether that's a food diary, whether that's a questionnaire, a survey, whether that's some type of nutrition handbook or whatever it is, that you can just engage in a conversation, take some data and then send them this lead magnet. And then once they've done that, they're in that nurture series of emails that I talked about before. So yeah, I would always have something there that is easy to then be able to take the data off the back of it. Anything you'd add?
Nope.
Keeping you up, Harry.
Wow.
I want to work on my client community and have it be a place where they feel comfortable to share their wins and ideas, etc. At the minute, it's a bit flat. Even though I have great relationships with them individually, I want it to be a valuable part of my services community. As community is one of my core business values. What tips do you have to bring people together and create more of a vibe and add value?
I think I'd run a part of your service through the Facebook group. Simple challenges and gives people a reason to talk, give people a reason to get involved. I think it's just a quick and easy one. That's the first one I'd go. It could be as simple as walking 1K a day for February or for March or whatever. It could be you have some themes throughout the week and keep the schedule of that week really consistent. So people know when the content is coming and when certain things are coming on the group. I think that helps as well. We've done a live at 8:30 on a Tuesday for 2 years. Whatever. So you know when it's coming, you know when it's here. I think schedule things in, make it a bit of a pattern. And create an expectation and get people used to having that content drop into the group. You could definitely run a challenge. You could definitely encompass this with an email where it might round up the week or promote the following month of what's happening on the group with some links. So I think creating awareness is a big one. I think regularity is another thing. I think simple things where it can bring opinions and people can basically back each other up, like a small little challenge, is going to be great. And then the only other thing is asking, again, similar to what I answered before, is have an understanding of, I'm sure you do know, who those kind of promoters and talkers are in your client base, and lean on them a little bit. Like ask them a direct question in the group, for example, to get them to comment, and you can start that kind of that process going with them. But again, same thing I said to earlier was you've got to expect some peaks and troughs of engagement in a Facebook group, and you can't expect everybody to engage. A lot of people, and more people are observers than actually get engaged. So, yeah, just manage your expectations on it as well. Anything to add, Anthony?
No.
Good. No. What is the difference of the preparation for the sessions for private PT sessions and semi-private group sessions? Doing the same process, like going through all person's goals, creating a plan for everybody, even in the group, and mix it with everybody else's goal, plus giving nutrition suggestions to everybody. Many thanks.
Yeah, honestly, in general, it's exactly the same. Whether you're coaching, if I was coaching Nick now face-to-face, like, you'd get the same service. You'd have goal setting at the start. We'd prescribe for the service at the start. We would bring out multiple different nutrition options, and he'd know how to manage them. He would get the same time invested from a programming perspective. So if I was coaching then Nick and I was coaching somebody else, that would be the exact same process, apart from the consultation goal setting would be separate. Same goes for small group training when there's 3 to 5 people in there. Like, your goal setting and your consultations would be, again, completely separate, because they come in at different times. You wouldn't have to do them all, like, these 5 people together, for example. So all of the service will remain exactly the same. The small group training, like, even that will be individualized programming. And we get onto this later on in the PT business transformation. in regards to the do's and don'ts of programming, because I think everyone feels like everyone needs to have something different when they're delivering a small group training session, where it should be very, very similar in regards to the movement patterns, but the exercise selection will be dependent on that client's ability, training age, confidence, competence, and all of that type of stuff. So yeah, in a nutshell, everything remains the same. There is no difference in preparation, in our opinion anyway, if you want to keep coaching at a high level and service at a high level. Next question. I'm trying to get a booking system in place so that clients can book their own appointments according to my availability, as this will save me time. This will save me chasing them every week to arrange their slots. What is the best program or app that I can use for this?
Calendly. And for this person, there is a, when is it? In a couple of weeks' time, there's like a bit of a how-to video when we get to the scheduling section on Calendly. But yeah, that's quickest, easiest, cheapest, works really well, really professional. Yeah, brilliant. Calendly.
Next question is regards to the check-in and about business metrics and stuff like that. We'll just get back to you individually on that, just to explain what it is. Next question.
What is the best bit of software to use to track a client's metrics?
Probably just training software. So like anything like Trainerize, True Coach, My PT Hub, PT Distinction, like any of them, whichever is your preference of whatever you think is user-friendly for you, user-friendly for your clients, but all of them track the performance metrics quite well for clients. And they're a good visual in some cases as well. So yeah, I would do a bit of homework into which one it is that you feel like you would be best working off, and also which is user-friendly. I think the most popular one at the minute seems to be PT Distinction from a lot of the PTs. So that might be something to look at. Any good tips on where to start first when qualified with regards to a business page and marketing for my target audience? Good question.
I think get yourself set up, first of all. I think without knowing your target audience and without you kind of doing some work on that, which is available now, right?
What? Yeah.
So probably the first thing is to watch through the sessions that were released on Sunday. That's got target marketing in, marketing campaign. And, you know, you can set yourself up a business page in regards to a Facebook page. I think that's a no-brainer. Instagram, maybe, if your audience is on there. So, again, when you go through these next couple of sessions over the next couple of weeks, this is going to literally give you that understanding and help you understand that moving forward. But yeah, get yourself started on a business page, Facebook, link it to Instagram. That's a quick, easy thing you can do as a very first starting point. Then literally it's a great time because every session that's released within the marketing sessions is going to just build up from understanding your audience to understanding your platforms to use to social media to everything. So this will really, really be a great time for you. I've developed a 4-week kettlebell skills coaching program. How would you go about marketing it? Find it hard to describe what you can do with a kettlebell without either asking them to watch a video or a video I upload or on YouTube or growing a kettlebell and demonstrating on the spot, making me look like a knob.
I think first of all, like the 4-week kettlebell skills coaching program very much talks our language. So apart from people who are passionate about maybe about training and love to train with kettlebells, that's a really hard message to get across to people. So you've got to look at, if you were to sit down and strip it back and go, right, what's the direct benefits? What's it going to give people? Well, the first one that comes to mind at this time of year is that gyms are busy. A kettlebell is mobile. You can move it around the gym. They can go to an area of the gym that they're comfortable in. And that's a direct benefit of that program. So instead of now talking about this kettlebell skills program that people might think is a little bit above them and beyond them, now you've took something in, and the direct benefit of that is that I can take, if the gym's busy, if I can't get on kit, if I'm not confident in an area of the gym, I can just go and pick up two kettlebells and follow this program for the next 4 weeks. And that gives me really like reassurance that I'm not going to struggle for motivation, consistency, and all of that. So you've got to kind of look at it and go, right, well, this is the feature, which is a 4 week kettlebell skills program. This is what it's going to kind of give them. But then what are the direct benefits of that program? Like, how does that offer support for people? How's that going to make people feel in terms of, because if I was to pick up a program from someone now, that really helps me with motivation, structure, knowledge, knowing what to do. Like, all of that gives me a feeling of, do you know what, I can just turn up at the gym now. So that's very reassuring for a lot of people. So I would look at marketing them types of messages instead of the what it is, basically. People need to see why they need it, and people need to see how that will make them feel. So all of that, what I've just gone through, needs to be put across in your message and in your audience's language. Anything you'd add?
No, I'd agree. I think, yeah, because I went through this a little bit with, like, when I was, well, still am, like, very, very kind of pro S&C / you know, kettlebells, ollie lifting, functionality, functional movements, very much about that, and trying to sell that trying to sell the feature of that, it'll only attract a really small number of people that already have that level of understanding. So you're looking at experienced trainers. So think about the benefit it will give people versus having that on the front end, instead of trying to, as you say, explain the feature, which I don't think is a bad thing, because when you demonstrate, it's great, right? It's brilliant. People get it. But yeah, the benefit and the outcome.
At what point can you class a conversation you have with someone as a lead?
When you have created an opportunity to follow up. So I would say, when you've got some form of contact details, whether that's an email address, whether that they followed you on social media, whether that's a phone number, for obvious reasons, to give them something that you've had, that to give them something and help them based on the discussion you've had. So that is, in my opinion, when they start to become a lead, when they're in your funnel, when they're in your kind of ecosystem, so you can talk to them again. But at the same time, like, if I met out on the gym floor and I maybe booked him in for an induction tomorrow and didn't get his contact details, I would still semi-class that as a lead. But always, whenever there's a booking, whenever there's a follow-up, you need obviously contact details to follow up, but you've got to give a compelling reason to ask for it, which comes through understanding them, understanding what's going to help them.
Go on then, next one.
Best app program to use for Instagram content scheduling?
If you want a free one, Facebook Studio Creator's fine, like, absolutely fine. And then the other one that I would say is better, because it's a paid version, is Buffer. That's the only other one that I've used before that I can comment on.
Hootsuite back in the day, didn't we?
Yeah, but it was shit. I didn't like it. So I'm just going to go off, because it's a question for me to answer and not for you to put in an answer. Then I'm.
Is that the rules then today?
Yeah,
it is. Okay. So basically, you're deciding when you want to answer.
Shut up, you tosser. Yeah. So Buffer or Facebook Studio Creator, Hootsuite. No, I didn't really like it.
Georgia, it's Ant's world. We all just live in it, you know.
And on that note, what a great way to end the podcast and the live Q&A that is. Is there any other questions?
Yeah.
Oh.
Got a question to add, guys. I've got a client who's pregnant and recently has been cancelling sessions quite frequently. To be fair, she was cancelling a bit before she was pregnant. I know that I 100% need to be patient, as a lot of this is out of her control, e.g. she's been affected by medication, etc. But at the same time, I'm having to refund her quite a bit, which is becoming an economical. You put that put pressure on me there this early to say that word, and economical. Jesus. I do want to support her, but it also has to work for me as a business. How would you recommend approaching this?
Mate, I would sit down and have a really good, honest conversation with her and look at, maybe bring up, this is how many sessions have been cancelled. Obviously, we know all of the her progress doesn't revolve around the personal training sessions alone, but like, this is kind of what an issue, like, what, how does she feel about it? What does she see as a solution to that? And maybe in the back of your mind, have certain things that you can have an open conversation about, but it might be that you just end up nutrition coaching her or online coaching her, so there's no personal training sessions there. And then she's just got programs to tap into when she's not with you and she feels fit enough to do them. I don't know. I'm suggesting things here that I don't know enough about in regards to the person. I don't know enough about the person, but I think the process I would potentially go through is sit down, go back through goal setting to try and make sure she's starting to feel like she can be open and honest. And is she feeling right to change right now and right to carry on moving forward, right to train? Is she in the right frame of mind? Present potentially some of the issues, let her overcome some of them barriers and problems herself. And then maybe just start to think, like I just said, in the back pocket, start to think about other type of areas that you could support her with. Like if she's struggling from a pregnancy and medication perspective, can you support her with nutrition and activity? Like, and start to customize a service revolved around her needs. So that would be what I would say, Nick.
I'd agree.
Well, that's great, isn't it?
I'd agree. I mean, obviously, like right now with what you're positioning for her and what she agreed to originally isn't working out. I don't know whether that's short term, could be. Again, there's so many variables that go into this. So, yeah, I would just maybe come to a conclusion or position a better fitting service for her, I guess. And like I mentioned, go through that.
Last question of the day. Ladies and gentlemen, please advise how I can manage my expectations so I don't get stressed. That's the $1 million question, isn't it?
It is.
And you, sir, have the opportunity to answer it. So don't let anyone down.
I think how do I measure it so I don't get stress expectations? I think first of all, if you're not kind of feeling stressed, and stress is a very open to interpretation, like pressure, excitement is stress sometimes when you're working towards something. I think first of all, like obviously having that clear, defined understanding of what you want, and also then if that needs breaking down into simpler chunks is going to be probably help. Having that larger kind of longer term goal broken down into smaller kind of milestones, and then enabling yourself to essentially prioritize what you need to do on a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly basis, which align directly with that milestone, so that you're just building it up gradually, I think will help. I also think that being self-aware of where the pressure is coming from, whether it's internal or external, is important as well. So if it's external, like how important and relevant is that? You know, can you reduce that in some way? Is that coming from a person, environment, a scenario that you can reduce? I would ask myself that question. And I guess just some time out weekly to reflect and just spend some time, not in your business, but just reflecting on your business for that week gone and the week ahead will help. Because otherwise, if you're running consistently on a treadmill and you're never going to get off and kind of see where things have gone and how things have happened, then you're going to be too much in it, and that can create overwhelm and stress as well. So those are my kind of go-tos without any more real context. Anything you would add, Anthony Park?
No.
But really? Okay.
No.
That's all right. Okay.
I'm always stressed. Mainly because I work with an absolute idiot. But apart from that, ladies and gents, apart from that, I hope you have a great day. I hope you have a splendid day, everyone. Splendid week. And that's my final thoughts.
Well, I'm just glad you stopped waffling.
Right then, peeps. See you in a bit.
See you later, guys.
Bye-bye.